Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Tanks enter Rafah. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Nicole Murray. On this Tuesday, May 7th, glad you could join us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The Israeli military has taken control of the Gaza side of the border crossing with Egypt, calling it a limited operation.
The main commencement ceremony at Columbia University has been canceled due to pro-Palestinian protests.
Donald Trump is being threatened with jail time after a judge in New York says he violated a gag order. Hear Trump's reaction.
And how scammers are causing your rent to go higher.
Once they got in, they used these properties, never had any intention of paying rent, either to live there and party or do whatever, or sometimes they would even rent it out and earn money as like an Airbnb,
wow.
Or else sometimes they were using it for sex trafficking or drugs.
Medora Lee at USA Today on rising incidents of rent fraud. The seesaw that is the Israel-Hamas war has tipped a couple of times again. First, an Israeli tank brigade entered the Rafah crossing earlier today. That's the main route for aid entering Gaza and for those trying to flee to Egypt. Second, the move seizing the crossing came hours after Hamas said it had accepted a ceasefire and hostage release proposal that had been mediated by negotiators from Egypt and Qatar. Israel, meanwhile, insisted the deal did not meet its core demands. And the New York Times says Hamas negotiators announced that not all of the 33 hostages who would be freed in the first phase of the accord are still living. From Washington, National Security spokesman John Kirby.
We don't support ground operations in Rafah that would put the majority or even any of the civilians there at any greater risk. We want to see their safety and security allowed for and factored in.
Egypt previously has warned any seizure of Rafah could see Palestinians fleeing over the border, which could threaten a peace deal with Israel. There will not be the traditional commencement ceremony at Columbia University this spring, thanks to weeks of pro-Palestinian demonstrations disrupting the New York City campus. The school has announced that it's canceled its main graduation ceremony, but will go ahead with smaller-scale graduations. The ceremony, which was scheduled for next Wednesday, has taken place outdoors, where students had set up a pro-Palestinian encampment that was taken down by police last week. Graduating student Artem Ilyanok.
I have friends whose families are coming from places like Singapore, France, Mexico, and other countries around the world who've spent thousands of dollars on plane tickets. So it's definitely an incredible disappointment.
The Ivy League school said it looked for another venue, but couldn't find one that could hold the more than 50,000 people expected. Columbia said it would hold smaller ceremonies for its different schools indoors. Administrators worried that a security presence at commencement would create a tense environment. Law enforcement is known to lean on facial recognition and social media monitoring tools when investigating things like campus protests and arrested protesters. But what could that mean for students after they leave the school? We've seen drones, for example, above protests at the University of Texas. Here's Sam Sabin, author of Axios Codebook. Sam, what about the surveillance tools?
Yeah, so nothing confirmed yet when it comes to the specific demonstrations on campus currently happening. But for years across the U.S., we've seen a lot of universities. You mentioned the University of Texas. We've seen some at the University of North Carolina, many other universities who have been using surveillance tools, whether it's facial recognition monitoring or social media analysis tools to kind of track students and those who are on their campuses, right? So a lot of universities have been tapping surveillance tools mostly since COVID, citing campus safety issues, and they have a good reason to do so, right? There's, of course, a lot of violence that can happen from school shootings or just rogue actors on your campus doing nefarious things. But this Technology has also been seen to be used to track students and others who participate in demonstrations on campus. We've seen it during the Black Lives Matter protests in 2020. There have been a few protests that have happened at various schools. I went to UNC, I'm biased, so I think a lot about the demonstrations around a Confederate monument on campus, and there are reports of surveillance being used in that case as well, and universities have used it in similar instances.
Boy, you brought up an interesting point in your story about kind of maybe what happens after graduation or after a student leaves school. What about having been surveilled, say, at a protest he or she may have attended?
Yeah, so part of the issue is that we just don't fully understand what tools campus police and also town and city police officers are using right now. A lot of that becomes uncovered through public records requests months later, maybe even years later. And part of the issue is that these investigations don't just end when the protests end, right? You have students and demonstrators who are going through arraignments and trials and facing charges. And so you have, of course, investigators on the flip side who are poring over the camera feeds and trying to identify who was at this protest using facial recognition, or they're monitoring social media posts to see who was commenting, who was potentially at this demonstration, potentially maybe vandalizing campus buildings or breaking in to various places. We also saw this in, this is not campus related, but the January 6th investigations, right? You saw a lot of the FBI and DOJ using very similar tools to identify who was on the ground. And so that same sort of surveillance tale of sorts happens on campus with students and professors and other demonstrators from around their communities. And so it's going to be a months-long endeavor, and you might even see instances where police officers are, these technologies are not perfect. You can see police officers maybe misidentifying someone or trying to track down others who were at these protests, but relying very heavily on surveillance tools that are not necessarily perfect.
We're speaking with Sam Sabin, author of Axios Codebook. Her story is called Surveillance Looms Over Pro-Palestinian Campus Protests. That's why we see a lot of the protesters wearing facial coverings or masks, right?
Absolutely. That was a thing that ended up starting around really in 2020 with the Black Lives Matter protest. I think people started to realize that the masks that we were all wearing to make sure that we weren't infecting people with COVID at the grocery store or in public places while we were walking around in the early days of the pandemic, also meant that facial recognition were also a great tool for, I guess, obscuring facial recognition if you were someone who wanted to go to these protests and be undetected. So, a lot of people since then have been, you know, wearing scarves around their face or just turning to N95 masks and things like that to kind of keep themselves from being recognized by cameras that can't really identify people just based off of like their forehead and the bridge of their nose, right? It's a huge trend now.
Thanks, Sam. Sam Sabin, author of Axios Codebook.
Pure opportunity. It's what Michigan is all about. The opportunity to do more. The opportunity for all businesses to reach their full potential. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to discover all the ways the MEDC is helping Michigan thrive.
Thanks for spending time with us. Saying the last thing he wants to do is jail a former president. The judge overseeing Donald Trump's hush money trial in New York threatened to toss Trump behind bars for another gag order violation. Before jurors entered the Manhattan courtroom yesterday to start week three of the trial, Judge Juan Merchan ruled Trump had violated his gag order for a 10th time and fined him $1,000 for claiming in an interview that the jury was mostly Democrats and that it was picked too quickly. Trump's reaction after the court day.
This judge has given me a gag order and said you'll go to jail if you violate it. And frankly, you know what? Our Constitution is much more important than jail. It's not even close. I'll do that sacrifice any day.
Meanwhile, two Trump Organization employees took the stand to walk jurors through a series of company records that prosecutors have alleged constitute core evidence of the 34 felony charges Trump faces. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Nicole Murray.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The Israeli military has taken control of the Gaza side of the Rafah border crossing with Egypt. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller.
We cannot support an operation in Rafah as it is currently envisioned. We have made clear, the secretary made this clear in his conversations with Prime Minister Netanyahu.
Meanwhile, Hamas announced it has agreed to a ceasefire proposal. Israel has referred to the deal as unacceptable because it does not meet previously discussed demands.
Number two.
NASA and Boeing have canceled an attempted launch to the International Space Station because of a last-minute mechanical issue. NASA's Stephen Stitch said it was the right decision.
It was moving in a strange behavior. The flight rules had been laid out for this flight ahead of time with the crew at the launch pad. The proper action was to take the scrub.
A new launch date has not yet been announced.
Number three.
Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene seems to have backed off calling for an immediate vote to oust House Speaker Mike Johnson.
So I just had a long discussion with the speaker in his office about ways to move forward for a Republican-controlled House of Representatives.
Greene said discussions between the two are set to continue today. Hormel Foods has issued a voluntary recall of two Planters peanut products, Honey Roasted Peanuts and Deluxe Lightly Salted Mixed Nuts, because of a possible listeria contamination. Both items were sold at Publix and Dollar Tree stores across the southern U.S. Do you like pickles? Do you like Dr. Pepper? What about both combined? It is the newest food trend at Sonic, and it is called Dr. Pepper Pucker. Just a heads up, because of the item's popularity, the fast food chain is starting to charge for a side of pickles in addition to the cost of the soda.
I'm in. That sounds like a good mix.
I'm hesitant, but make it a cocktail and I'm there.
As a business owner, you have necessary expenses, but some quick math might reveal that you're spending on items that are narrowing your profit margin. Get a smarter business plan with NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system. You have access to accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR all in one platform. With NetSuite, everything can be accessed in the cloud from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems, and you improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math and see how your company can benefit from NetSuite. Visit netsuite.com/Gordon. NetSuite has proven ways to cut costs and boost performance. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. NetSuite.com/Gordon. That's NetSuite.com/Gordon. Hey, glad you're with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Inflation, undersupply, high demand, and exorbitant home prices are often reasons cited for why rents are high. But there's another few people talk about, and that's rampant fraud. It's a story by Medora Lee, personal finance reporter at USA Today. Medora, what's happening?
So during the pandemic, there were, people really afraid that people were going to be renters were going to be evicted because they couldn't pay rent. So they put in this eviction moratorium, and then everybody was at home, and people became very, very good at creating something called synthetic IDs, where they use some stolen information that they got in some dark web corner of the internet, and which was real data. And then they kind of like slowly build a fake profile, mixing the real data with fake data over time. And so people, and it's very hard to detect because of that, people started using this to rent properties, and they were able to get through the screening. And so once they got in, they used these properties, never had any intention of paying rent, either to live there and party or do whatever, or sometimes they would even rent it out and earn money as like an Airbnb. Wow. Or else sometimes they were using it for sex trafficking or drugs. So this has become a really big problem because they've become so good at getting through the screening process with the synthetic fraud.
Goodness. What kind of data do we have on rental fraud?
So this was actually kind of stunning because it's gotten so big that one of these organizations did a survey of their members. And in this survey, they said almost every single respondent, I think it was like over 93% of the respondents, reported experiencing fraud in the past 12 months.
Why is it surging at this point? Is because it's easy? Because it works?
Yeah, because it's really difficult to detect because it's so sophisticated, using fake information and real information. So it gets caught up on, you know, they might say, you know, Joe Smith works at this company and that might be real. And even the Social Security number might be real. And then they kind of intersperse it with fake data. So it's very, very hard to detect, and you need very sophisticated technology, which is another issue. A lot of, especially mom and pop landlords, don't have that, can't afford and don't have that sort of technology to kind of detect it. Mm. So they get ripped off a lot. You know, so it's not just like high luxury apartment rentals, it's kind of all over. And then here's the thing, that one fake synthetic identity can sprout into branches and branches, because when you sign up for credit cards and things like that, sometimes you have an opportunity to put another authorized user on it. So they take that opportunity to put another quote unquote authorized user on that account to build up that fake account's credit.
Thanks, Medora. Medora Lee, personal finance reporter at USA Today. By the way, if you've missed anything, be sure to check out a podcast of today's show. It's available every day on the This Morning with Gordon Deal app, plus wherever you get your podcasts.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We are America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Hey, glad you're with us. Welcome into Tuesday, May 7. Gordon Deal with Nicole Murray. Some of our top stories and headlines: Israeli tanks enter Rafah in what it calls a limited operation. A tornado that tore through Barnesdall, Oklahoma, has killed at least one person and injured several others. There are power outages there and in Missouri and Arkansas. Trump threatened with jail for violating a gag order for the 10th time in his hush money trial. Four winning days in a row for the Dow. Hip-hop fans say they're benefiting from the new music Drake and Kendrick Lamar are releasing to diss each other. And the boy who offered his only dollar to a man he thought was homeless. That story in about 20 minutes. Donald Trump, a billionaire, accustomed to jet-setting between adoring campaign rallies and his Florida estate, has spent two-plus weeks so far sitting unhappily at the defense table in his hush money trial. Corinne Ramey, courts reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says though he fumes daily about the 34 New York felony charges he's facing, the small indignities of being on trial are what appear to bother him most. Corey, explain.
You know, I spent a lot of time in the Manhattan Criminal Courthouse, and it is a pretty drab place. But I think in terms of Trump, like, he has no control over the situation. So it's cold in there. And not only can he not change it, but when his lawyer asked the judge to turn up the temperature, the judge said, well, if I do, it'd go up about 30 degrees in here.
Wow.
Like, it just doesn't have good climate control. Yeah, it's an old building.
You find the same thing? I mean, you personally, you're freezing in there too, I guess?
Yeah, it's cold. I wear my coat.
And so what else rubs him the wrong way?
He does not have access to his favorite beverage, Diet Coke, when he's in the courtroom. He can only have water. He doesn't have control over, say, when he uses the bathroom, that the judge determines the schedule of breaks and all these sorts of things. But I think the worst of it really is that he can't talk. He has to just sit there silently as people several feet away from him are talking about his past.
And no family, right? So no family members don't attend the trial?
Family members have not attended. They could if they wanted to. There's certainly no stopping them, but they have never showed up, at least as far as I'm aware.
Even one time, I think you said he got reprimanded for standing up prematurely. Is that... was that what, him trying to get a rise out of the judge, or the judge being a real stickler, giving him a hard time, a little of both? What's behind that?
I don't think he was trying to get a rise out of the judge, actually. I think that the judge you know, really maintains order in that courtroom, and nobody in that courtroom stands up until the judge tells them to. And he had had a long day, and so he started to stand up a little prematurely and got reprimanded.
Jeez. We're speaking with Corinne Ramey, courts reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her story is called Donald Trump is used to the finer things in life at the courthouse. Quote, he's miserable. Is he falling asleep, as some have said?
You know, it's actually sort of hard to know. I think he has, but I think a lot of times he's actually listening with his eyes closed. Or sort of, a colleague of mine always says she thinks that he's meditating.
And you said, too, he's lost control of his calendar, which I presume is difficult. What does that mean exactly?
That means that the judge really determines what days he has to be in court. So he had to be in court on his wife Melania's birthday, which he was not happy about. And he had to miss the arguments on immunity that the Supreme Court held. And he was also not happy about. And the judge said, I mean, sure, the U.S. Supreme Court's important, but hey, this is important here, too, and you'll be here. And Trump had no choice but to be there.
Wow. All right, so we're in 2+ weeks now, and, I mean, this could go on, I think, as you said, maybe another month, month and a half, right?
It could, yeah. The judge suggested that early June could put us in jury deliberations, so I'm sort of thinking that's about the perceived timetable right now.
Wow. What else have you noticed? Because I think, you've been around a lot of courts. This particular courtroom, Manhattan Criminal Court, is different from, what, some better courts with different accommodations?
Yeah, so I've seen Trump a fair amount in court, and federal court is really different. The courtrooms are just fancier. There's not these temperature control issues. Trump was also in quite a nice courtroom in the civil courthouse for the civil fraud case that he sat during. But I think another big difference with both the federal court with the E. Jean Carroll case and the civil fraud case was that Trump was choosing to be there. He did not have to attend those proceedings. But for criminal proceedings, he has to be there and is not given the choice. And I think that's hard on him, too.
And then why no Diet Coke? Or is that just a general no food and beverage in the courtroom thing?
No food and beverage in the courtroom. But, you know, I should also mention, just to, like, put this in perspective a little bit, that, you know, trials are hard for anybody, yeah, whether you're Trump or whether you're just sort of the everyday defendants in Manhattan Criminal Court. But in some ways, it's probably a little easier for Trump, since a lot of the defendants in that building on a daily basis, they're staying in jail, they're being woken up early in the morning, they might be handcuffed, they're just in a different position than Trump, even if he does have to deal with some cold temperatures.
Thanks, Corey. Corey Ramey, courts reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Let me introduce the sports fans to Prize Picks. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app with over 3 million active members. It's the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. On Prize Picks, it's just you against the numbers. All you do is pick more or less on 2-6 player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Here come the NBA and NHL playoffs, plus MLS soccer is underway, right? So maybe on a single entry, you choose LeBron James for more than 23 points, Connor McDavid for less than 3 assists, and Lionel Messi for more than 1 goal. You can now win up to 100 times your money. With as little as 4 correct picks, you can turn $10 into $1,000. Download the app today and use code DEAL for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code DEAL on PrizePicks for a deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks is really simple to play. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. Download the app and use code DEAL for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, it's been a minute since we've talked about food, and we have two stories to discuss today. Let's start with ketchup, something we've used all of our lives, though it's not always easy. Pouring ketchup from a full glass bottle was torture, but thankfully squeeze bottles came along to help with that. But did you know there was an even easier way requiring less effort? Popular TikToker Jordan the Stallion 8 outlined to his more than 12 million followers the secret to extracting Gordon's least favorite condiment. Jordan, who claims that he wrote a paper in college on ketchup bottle development, said that the upside-down ketchup bottles are called gravity bottles and are meant to be squeezed from the side rather than from the front and back. Jordan demonstrates how a quick squeeze and release to each side of the bottle will alter the air pressure and push the ketchup right out of the bottle with no additional effort, though he says it works better with full or an almost full bottle. The post racked up thousands of comments. Even Heinz chimed in, seemingly impressed, writing, "Who says classic brands can't learn new tricks?" Well, you snickered quite loudly, man, during the middle of that. What's the issue with you now?
It works best when it's full or almost full.
Right.
Really? No kidding. The ketchup comes out more easily that way? Who knew?
Yes.
It's gravity design. Oh, man.
Right. It's an air pressure situation there. Yeah.
You know what solves it? One downward shake.
Sure. And well, I mean, again, with the squeeze bottles, we don't even need this necessarily.
Not necessarily.
If we only had glass bottles, then yes, yeah, we'd be looking for this, because the glass bottles were the worst. But and that was a whole air pressure thing, too. You had to tilt those just to the right angle to be able to get the ketchup out of those.
That required some skill.
That did. Right. Yeah, we already have the squeeze bottles. Yep. We don't necessarily need to have it even easier for us.
Were there times with the glass bottle of Heinz ketchup that you would stick the knife in there to sort of like penetrate the bubble and allow the flow of ketchup?
I don't know if I ever did that for whatever the reason.
I could have been TikTok famous like in the late 70s if I had shown people how to do that.
Yeah. Where was the equivalent of TikTok back then?
Or you can solve this by just grabbing mustard instead.
See, I was waiting for that. Yeah. I was waiting for you to diss the ketchup and say, why even bother with the ketchup in the first place? And we marvel every year at the affordable food prices at the Masters Tournament, with a $1.50 pimento cheese sandwich helping to offset the pricey tickets to get into that major. Contrast that with the food prices seen at the Formula One race in Miami over the weekend. Attendees lucky enough to make it into the VIP suites for the race were stunned to see the menu board featuring bites in the hundreds of dollars. Now, it should be noted that these likely weren't individual food portions, but they were eye-popping nonetheless. For example, Maine lobster rolls would set you back $280. An F1 platter featuring sliders and chicken tenders cost $210. And a fruit platter was priced at $190. And if all that wasn't fancy enough for you, you could add 1 ounce of caviar to any item for only $400. And that didn't even include the drinks, where bottles of liquor routinely ran in the thousands, and one bottle of tequila was priced at $12,000.
Man.
Commenters had lots to say about the excess, with many wondering if they could Uber to the nearest McDonald's.
That's amazing. Well, if you're in the VIP suite, you could probably afford these things.
I mean, I guess so, yeah. But I mean, what if you got like your free ticket, you know, to the VIP suite, like your company gave it to you or something, right? You show up there, you just want to have some food, and all of a sudden, you know, $280 for chicken fingers or whatever it is.
I got to skip the May car payment because I need some chicken tenders and sliders.
Well, that's when you start going around to everybody else in the suite. Hey, you want to chip in? You want to chip in like $5-$10 each?
Thank you, Mike.
What does the future of mobility in Michigan sound like? It's the sound of new EV charging stations at our state parks. Discover all the ways MEDC is driving next-gen mobility in Michigan at michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. Are computers impacting our attention spans? Two decades of research says the answer is yes. The digital age is impacting our ability to stay focused. Sound like you? USA Today put together recommendations to improve your attention span. Number one, prioritize breaks. The best type is away from electronic devices and outside. But if you can't get outside, play a game on your phone or do something like knitting. Number two, avoid distraction rather than resisting distraction. Try using noise-canceling headphones. Face your desk toward a wall or work alongside someone who makes you feel accountable. And number three, practice meta-awareness. Next time you have the urge to open an app, ask yourself, do I really need to go on social media right now? 8 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Nicole Murray.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The judge presiding over Donald Trump's hush money trial has fined the former president an additional $1,000 for violating his gag order. The former president, as he was leaving the courtroom.
The other thing that maybe is even more disgraceful is the gag order, where I can't basically, I have to watch every word I tell you people.
The justice also threatened Trump with jail time.
Number two.
Columbia University has canceled its main commencement ceremony, but will host smaller graduations after weeks of pro-Palestinian demonstrations disrupting the campus. Graduate Izzy Munson of Emory University in Atlanta, who moved its ceremony 20 miles off campus to avoid disruption.
I'm just really sad, you know, in the year of 2020, so the pandemic uprooted our entire senior year of high school. We didn't have a graduation for that, and then freshman year here was completely online.
Number three.
At least four tornadoes have touched down in Oklahoma, and several tornado warnings have been issued in Kansas, Nebraska, and Tennessee as millions face severe weather risks. The Storm Prediction Center says storms are expected through early morning today. Police said a 10-month-old girl that had been abducted from a New Mexico park where two women, including her mother, was discovered dead, has been found, and a suspect is in custody. Clovis Police Deputy Chief Trevor Thrawn.
The suspect, who was taken into custody, was identified as Alec Isaiah Collins, a 26-year-old from the Houston, Texas area. Collins is currently in custody of the FBI and our law enforcement partners in Abilene, Texas.
The infant's condition has not been provided. We have discussed the unique five-legged puppy named Bella, who was rescued in Wisconsin. An update from the Wisconsin Humane Society, Bella has been adopted.
Hey. Very good.
Yeah, the rescuers are saying she's super sociable, and then when she gets tired, she's one of the best snuggle bugs she's ever had.
Nice. That's so. It's a weird thing, like the one leg sort of on top of the other, they're like compressed. She kind of has to drag it around, hop around a little bit on it.
That
was a no-brainer. She was going to get adopted.
No-brainer.
As soon as that went public, right? Thank you, Nicole. Thanks for being with us. Another reminder that humanity will be just fine. A 9-year-old boy from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, gave his only dollar to a man he thought was homeless. CBS News says that man was Matt Busbis, who has built and sold several outdoor companies worth hundreds of millions of dollars. One morning last month, he was rattled out of bed by the sound of a fire alarm in his condo complex. So the 42-year-old shot out of bed and raced out, only to discover there was no fire. But he was awake now. So even though he was wearing mismatched clothes and was disheveled looking, he decided to go out for a cup of coffee. A boy named Kevin Ellis approached him, saying he always wanted to help a homeless person. So he handed Busbis his only dollar, which he had gotten for good grades from his father. Well, Busbis was so touched, he invited Ellis in for a snack and then connected with Ellis's father, who was next door. As a reward for his kindness, Busbis gave the 9-year-old Ellis a shopping spree, 40 seconds to pick out whatever he wanted in a store called Buckfeather, including a new bike. That'll do it for this hour. For Nicole Murray and Mike Gavin, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.